Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome in, everybody, on a Tuesday here. Nice to be with all of you. I'm Payne and Pendergast. I'm Sean Pendergast. He's Seth Payne. And yeah, I got bumped off like at 5:50, you know, as you and I were listening to Damon and Amanda Lara in our separate domains. And I had to actually call our engineer, Robbie, to get me reset and get me back potted up. And at 5:59 and like 48 seconds, I was reconnected again, but I was listening to the Damon Amanda Lara show and getting a text from Jonesy. Getting a text from Jonesy saying he was bumped off. So I'm assuming you and I are on the air, so let's not curse. But is that what you were hearing too?
Yeah, I was hearing that. Damon Amanda Lara talking about various things like having to use the paper mail to refund an online purchase or something. Damon vets out a lot of the issues that he's having just like administratively in his personal life on his show. I feel like he gets a lot of growth and a lot of but also a lot of kind of bookkeeping and simple tasks done while he's on his show.
That's pretty good. I mean, when you think about it, in terms of multitasking and trying to maximize your day, if you can accomplish all of your just menial administrative tasks, and if speaking them through and talking about them helps you get them done faster, and you can do that on your nationally syndicated radio show, that's a really efficient use of your time. You and I don't have that luxury.
Well, I thought about using the text line for that purpose, like for things in my personal life, like just let the text line decide how I should punish my child, things like that.
Mm, and, yeah, I'm sure that'll be very rational and level-headed. So how are you today, my friend?
I'm good. Just getting through the Rona, baby. Getting through the Rona, reading various articles now. I've noticed that we've gotten to that point of this shutdown where people are at least understanding and accepting that nobody knows anything about how this is going to end.
Right.
And at this point, pretty much anything goes, right? Like it's almost liberating in a way, I suppose, that nobody knows anything, but it can be pretty frustrating. I don't know if you can tell from the last 30 seconds or not, Sean, but I'm right on the edge. On the brink. I'm barely holding on to my sanity right now. I'm about to lose it. I had two family members, I won't say who, but somebody in my relatively like nuclear family, a husband and wife, throw bread angrily at each other the other day.
Now,
like,
wait, what?
They were upset about a loaf of bread being stale. So the wife threw it at the husband and the husband threw it back. I don't know if that qualifies as domestic violence or not, but it's not typical of this family.
Okay, so a family that you know threw bread at each other, the husband and the wife.
Somebody in my family, yeah.
Somebody in your immediate family.
Yeah,
but you're not gonna dime them out and say who the husband and wife were that were throwing food at each other.
Right, and I don't know because you know the wife instigated it, but it's never okay for the man to strike back. But I don't know when it comes to stale bread whether that's true or not. Neither of them were aiming for the head or trying to do harm. But it was kind of just like say if you had a Nerf ball or something, and you're like, I don't want it, and you threw it at the person, and the other person took the Nerf ball and threw it angrily back. It was kind of like that, but with a loaf of bread.
You're sending a message.
Yeah.
You're sending a message.
This couple would not typically do that, even though even though this was just like they were genuinely angry while they were doing this. But it's signs of like it's a little bit of crack in a veneer of an otherwise strong relationship. And it's because they've been locked together for 2 weeks.
It's going to happen. I think you need to accept that this is just going to be some of the broken, not you, but this hypothetical couple needs to accept that this is just some of the collateral damage and broken glass that's going to come with COVID-19 quarantine. That's it. That's how it is.
The kid someday is going to be sitting in therapy 15 years from now, their kid. All of a sudden, that repressed memory is going to come to the forefront, bubbling up, and the therapist is going to be like, what the hell are you talking about? Your mom threw a loaf of bread at your dad? Get the hell out of here, you wimp.
This unnamed child may actually benefit from this because, as we know, while it's very tasty, bread is one of the worst things nutritionally for you if you're trying to maintain your weight or you want to keep away from the carbs. Bread is the devil when it comes to that. This child may now have an aversion to bread because of the Pavlovian reaction that he or she will get when they see a loaf of bread. They'll remember their parents throwing it at each other like a couple of monkeys. So
yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean?
Are you gluten sensitive? No, but stale bread turns me into an emotional wreck.
Yeah. Yeah. Now all that couple needs to do is start throwing sweets at each other. This kid will never get type 2 diabetes or anything. It'll be good. Yeah. This is how you instill health in your children is take all of the things that aren't nutritious and throw them at each other during the COVID-19 because you have the virus to blame it on right now.
Yeah.
You have a mulligan.
Tomorrow night they'll go with their hash pipes. There you go. They're going to throw you a hash pipe. Then my kid will never touch hash.
Yeah. All right. Seth, can I make you feel better?
Yeah.
Laramie Tunsil and the Texans are talking to each other.
Yeah. We're talking fresh bread money here. We're talking, Sean, wait for it. We're talking dough, baby. Yeah.
Yes. 6:07 in the morning.
Oh,
yes.
Screw this quarantine. I'm losing it.
Seth, the initial offer by the Texans, not surprisingly, was for the highest paid contract for a tackle in league history. and even less surprisingly, Laramie Tunsil's demands are much, much higher than that.
Jack Easterby and Bill O'Brien. We're sitting in front of the FaceTime camera. They're all on Zoom. And Bill O'Brien wrote the number down on a piece of paper. Laramie Tunsil's getting himself all braced up. He's that just doesn't deal with an agent or anything. And Bill O'Brien holds a piece of paper up to the camera. And Laramie Tunsil had to hold a piece of paper up in front of his face so they couldn't see his smirk.
Like a bandana,
Laramie, this is just our first offer. There's room to work here, but how about we make you the highest paid offensive tackle in football in the history of the NFL?
Not good enough.
You could take this one of two ways. It's that the Texans have the cap space with which to work. Bill O'Brien knew that they were gonna have to pay Laramie Tunsil probably like the highest paid offensive tackle in football. And maybe they just don't want to mess around. I would just say, from my personal experience and my personal past, being on teams that operate that way, that dole out a ton of money and almost like don't even like negotiating, at least with some of the bigger contract guys, it can lead to trouble down the road. Because I was on the Jaguars and we'd gone to AFC championship games twice in 3 years, and they were trying to make this push. And there was almost no negotiating. They would just go, they would blow other teams out of the water with their high offers. And we were very competitive for a while. But after a while, the chickens came home to roost. And that's what I worry about. But I really, as long as Laramie Tunsil and Deshaun Watson get hemmed up and the Texans remain in pretty good cap shape, which they are right now, depending on how you calculate the contracts that haven't officially been signed yet, the Texans have either the best or the second best position in the salary cap right now in terms of cap space. So I say go for it. Go for it, Bill O'Brien. Show Laramie Tunsil the world. Bring him into your dojo.
Yeah, we'll talk plenty about this Laramie Tunsil negotiation getting underway as we roll on here throughout the morning. Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne with you on a Tuesday. We are in our homes like you are, so we're connected. We are simpatico with all of you as we continue to do the shows from our houses here. We appreciate you tuning in and making us a part of your day. So Seth, ESPN is really, really trying hard to get this Monday Night Football thing right. And all I can think of is Booker McFarland's got to be sitting in front of his computer seeing these headlines pop up. And every time it does, I'm just picturing him throwing a shot of whiskey at his computer. Like, damn, I'm still here. So we know that they courted Tony Romo. They courted Peyton Manning. They now, according to Clay Travis, is the first one I saw have this story, that ESPN has made an eight-figure offer to Drew Brees to become the color analyst for Monday Night Football when he's done playing football. Like, hey, whenever you're done, you've got this job that pays nearly as much as you make right now waiting for you to talk about football while Booger McFarland is still the color analyst. What do you think about Drew Brees as a possibility for Monday Night Football?
I can't even think about Drew Brees because I'm really starting to feel for Booger McFarland. Even though I don't really enjoy him as the color analyst for Monday Night Football, this extended cuckolding of Booger McFarland is one of the cruelest things I've ever seen. This is the Kenny Rogers, God rest his soul.
Yeah.
What's that song? You picked a fine time to leave me, Eileen?
Fine time to leave me, Lucille.
Lucille. Yeah. So Kenny Rogers is sitting in the bar with this hussy Lucille, and in comes this huge guy up to the bar, and Kenny Rogers thinks he's about to get his ass beat, and it's actually Booger McFarland talking to the ESPN producer and saying, hey, listen, buddy, there's a virus thing going on right now. I don't even know if I'm going to have a job a year from now. And here you are out gussying it up with first Peyton Manning and now Drew Brees. Like every guy out around town, you're out whoring around with him. And I'm just back on the farm taking care of Sean McDonough. So it's not Sean McDonough. So I think that Drew Brees, I could see him being really good. I just don't, it's a weird situation, isn't it? Like, they're gonna give Drew Brees a contract to replace Booger McFarland whenever he chooses to retire.
Yeah. Here's the thing, Seth, is I see what they're trying to do. And I say this as somebody who watches Monday Night Football every week. I don't need to have a big, huge star there telling me what they're seeing. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like, boy, the problem is not that Booger isn't a quarterback or isn't a big name. The problem is that Booger McFarland is not good. So I just want somebody good. You know what I mean? That's why I think Dan Orlovsky would be awesome on Monday Night Football. I love him on Get Up. I like his enthusiasm. I like how plugged in he is on social media. I always feel like I learn something when I'm watching Orlovsky. And you've made this point many, many times. Sometimes the backup quarterbacks are better at this stuff than the guys who are big star quarterbacks. And I can see Peyton. Tony Romo has become the best in the business. I can see the fascination with Peyton Manning. He's next level. He's a next level star above and beyond just what he was in the NFL. And he was one of the biggest stars in the NFL while he was in the league. He's a Manning. They're sort of the first family of football. He's got a good sense of humor. He's got good energy. He's Peyton Manning. That I can see. Drew Brees is a future Hall of Famer. There's no question about that. I don't think he's a slam dunk by any means, though. You know what I'm saying? Like I don't need a big star. I'm cool with a backup quarterback helping me learn things as long as I enjoy their vibe on TV.
Well, I think that in a way they're kind of trying to chase the success they had with Gruden, which is if you look over the litany of color analysts that Monday Night Football has had, there have been plenty of bad color analysts. I mean, the worst ever was when they tried having Kornheiser and Ron Jaworski on together with Mike Tirico, where I like Jaworski okay, but putting Kornheiser with him together with Ron Jaworski, gosh, that, you know what? We're ungrateful bastards, because that was relatively recent. That was Jaworski and Kornheiser were 2008, and that wasn't, that had to have been... That was worse than this past season, right? With just Tessitore and Booger?
I like Jaworski a lot. I don't remember, to be honest with you. I'd probably just be doing some confirmation bias if I were saying. I don't remember specifically. It was not remarkable by any means. I'm not longing for it.
look, okay. Monday Night Football was a big deal, let's say, for a long, long time. And from 1987 to 1997, for a period of 11 years, it was still a really, really big deal. That entire time, Dan Dierdorf was in the booth, you know, with Frank Gifford, albeit. But Dan Dierdorf being a color analyst on any football show generally doesn't make it a better football show. So, like, I'm with you. I don't think it needs to be such a high ticket or a high dollar item. I don't think you have to take a guy that's a superstar or anything like that to get him. But I understand that they have had those moments where, whether it's Frank Gifford or John Gruden or whomever else, it becomes like the most culturally relevant football broadcast of the week. One that people kind of look at and like, oh yeah, Monday Night Football, that's prime time.
I'd probably be the most emotional. And we're talking about Drew Brees being offered a huge contract by ESPN to take over Monday Night Football color analyst duties when he's done playing. Of all the people to be up in their feelings about this, Saints fans, I would probably be number one for me. If I were a Saints fan and I were seeing this, I would be like, keep your greasy palms off of our quarterback. Stop giving him things that look just as enticing, maybe more enticing than being the quarterback of our football team. I think he signed to a 2-year deal, right? He was a free agent a few weeks ago. I think he signed, very quietly signed to a 2-year deal. And I say he's the linchpin of keeping their Super Bowl window open, but Teddy Bridgewater was 5-0 as their starting quarterback this year. They've actually got a pretty good team beyond Drew Brees, but still, Drew Brees is an icon in New Orleans. If I'm a Saints fan, I want Drew Brees to play until he's 50, as long as he's still capable of doing so. If I'm a Saints fan, I'm like, back away, ESPN.
Look at what they did with Tony Romo. I mean, between Jerry Jones not letting anybody talk to Tony Romo about a trade, you know, and that includes the Houston Texans, Tony Romo sat out there and waited and wasn't allowed to hear from anybody. But meanwhile, CBS was knocking on the door and asking if he wanted to come be a broadcaster. And oh, by the way, here's a whole huge pile of money where you don't have to be breaking vertebrae to do it. You can go the entire NFL season, make millions of dollars, and not have to break your back a single time. So that was way more appetizing to Tony Romo. I'm glad ultimately because the Texans ended up getting Deshaun Watson instead of Tony Romo. But that took an avenue away from the Texans to get better that year because CBS was meddling in their affairs. I almost don't think it's ethical, Sean, for a partner of the NFL, a broadcast partner of the NFL, to go meddling with the career, like the actual career of a guy like Drew Brees.
Yeah, they're tampering, Seth. ESPN is tampering.
They are. You know, imagine they try this with a Bob Kraft employee. Bob Kraft would be all over that. He'd be suing like the Dickens. That's what New Orleans needs to be doing right now. They need to litigate.
Seth, they actually would. Seth, can you imagine if they were going after Tom Brady like 2 years ago, you know, when the Patriots are still winning Super Bowls and in Super Bowl contention and ESPN? That's actually a really, really good point that if I'm trying to think, like, if the Patriots, who are always in the crosshairs of football legalities, if ESPN were going after Tom Brady, what would Bill Belichick be doing? Back when he and Brady were not sideways like they were at the very end of the run here.
They can't sue, but he can make a stink out of it. You know, you could raise your objection and say, what the hell? You know, I bet Bill Belichick would like refuse to allow the interviews. He would flat out say, no, I'm not going to let ESPN in here to do their, and then he'd get fined for it, but he'd make a big stink out of it. He would make it super uncomfortable for ESPN. Yep. He would just be like an extra big jerk for ESPN. He'd refuse to do anything extra and above and beyond for him.
All right, Seth, as you know, a lot of our listeners think that our good friend Ross Tucker has it in for the city of Houston, in particular the Houston Texans, because when he would join us throughout the season on Fridays, he was not always the most complimentary of some of the things that the Texans were doing as a team. You know, at points throughout the season where it was impossible to really criticize them on the heels of some of the wins they had, when they beat Kansas City, when they beat the Patriots, Ross was very fair and complimentary. I don't think he's ever been really unfair with the Texans. I just think that he's a weekly guest on our show during a season where, when you're in a position like Ross Tucker's, there's a lot to analyze where you get a little concerned. And some of his concern, quite honestly, is coming back to roost with the things like the DeAndre Hopkins trade this offseason. Is my assessment of how you think our audience, or how I think our audience, looks at Ross Tucker accurate in your mind?
I don't know, because I think there's a minority of our fans or our listeners that think that way. Sometimes Ross, I think, a little bit of it with Ross is kind of the way he phrases things and almost his whole voice and just his whole demeanor in general. He kind of sounds sometimes like the guy who's had a few at the bar and he's telling you that your sister is ugly. He's kind of got that tone about him. He's like, yeah, you're the guy with the ugly sister, aren't you? So that kind of guy.
Yeah. He's very blunt. He's very frank. He is very clear in this article, and the article is sort of prefaced by saying, hey, look, I write a football column and there's not a ton going on right now. Free agency is in a bit of a lull. So let's talk about the thing that everybody's talking about, Bill O'Brien in Houston, which is always fascinating to me because I know you and I get some texts, people like, hey, are you guys going to move on from O'Brien at some point? And maybe we will, but at this point, it is what a lot of people are still talking about. And I think Ross is a decent gauge to say, hey, this is what people are still talking about nationally, these articles of winners and losers in free agency. And I know the Hopkins trade was not a free agent move, but it was a move made during free agency. So, Seth, what I thought I would do is read some of these sentences in Ross Tucker's article, and then I'll let you decide just how accurate or spot on he is. And I guess just to make it realistic, if you'd like, I'll read them in Ross Tucker's voice so that we get the true 2 a.m. at the bar feel for these quotes. Are you up for that?
I'm up for that. Let's do that.
Okay.
That sounds
all right. Here we go. okay. This is the very beginning of the article. I think a compelling case can be made that the trade the Texans general manager / head coach recently made, sending DeAndre Hopkins to the Arizona Cardinals, is the worst in NFL history.
I think you have a compelling case there, and I think you could make that case, fake Ross, because as you cite in your article, the Saints sending every draft pick in 1999, as well as first and third round picks in 2000 to the Redskins for Ricky Williams, that was a bad trade and hard to defend on any single level. I mean, in modern times, can you imagine doing that for a running back these days? If you did that in 2020, they might actually extradite you to somewhere. I don't know. So I don't know. The one thing there is that at the very least, you're taking a swing at somebody who at the time was regarded as a can't miss prospect, and it ended up being a pretty damn bad trade. So I would put it up there on that same level. I guess the one thing that maybe sets that apart and makes the Saints trade for Rick William a little less bad is that there was the promise of a great player. There was a genuine and bona fide promise of getting Ricky Williams and what people thought he was going to be in the NFL, where with what the Texans got for DeAndre Hopkins, you didn't get the promise of much at all. You've got, like, it's not realistic to hope that David Johnson turns back to what he was in 2013. We've just seen this too many times. I can't recall off the top of my head a running back who had three mediocre seasons and then all of a sudden looked as awesome as they did 4 years hence or 4 years prior. So that's probably not going to happen. The Herschel Walker trade with the Cowboys, that was obviously an infamous trade. The interesting thing about that is that, let's see, at least I would say that was probably a worse trade than this one, but at the very least, the Vikings got a good football player out of it. I don't think the Texans are actually getting a really good football player. Certainly nobody like Herschel Walker.
Yeah, that's the weird thing about, and fake Russ will start reading again in a second, or fake Ross, I should say, but that's the, you know, the difference with, I think there's two differences with the Hopkins trade and those trades, Seth. The difference with the Hopkins trade is the team in those other trades that was getting the primary player in the trade are the ones who wound up losing the deal. In this trade, the one who got the primary player in the trade is going to be the one who winds up winning the deal in all likelihood, and that's the Arizona Cardinals. And that kind of plays to my second point, which is what makes this trade even more inexcusable is that I do think certainly when the Walker trade was made, and then maybe even the 90s, we didn't have, I don't think football had nearly as good a grasp as what draft capital was in terms of currency back then as they do now. You know, the league overall is a lot smarter for what exactly draft picks are worth. And that's the frustrating thing about nearly every trade that Bill O'Brien has made is that the involving draft picks is that there's just, it's totally off kilter for what the value of the pick should be. That, you know, you're getting decent players or good players in the case of Tunsil in return, but you're paying $2 on the dollar to get guys like that.
Yeah. What else you got, Ross?
I'm not saying he's the worst GM ever or that the Hopkins trade was the worst one on record. I'm just saying that both are absolutely in the discussion.
Yeah, of course. I mean, what are we talking about here? We're talking about like three different eras of football. We're talking about the late 90s. We're talking about, let's see, when was the Herschel Walker trade? Was that? That was
1990.
Yeah. So, you know, the complete, you've gone 20 years since the last really abomination of a trade. So yeah. Just to be in the discussion. And I think it's notable too, that the trade for Ricky Williams was architected. The architect of that was a Mike Ditka, another right. football coach with a whole lot of personnel control at that moment.
Right.
So I think that's relevant. Yeah. It's definitely in the discussion. I think even people that defend the trade would have to understand why this trade is still in the discussion for potentially worse trades.
Okay. Seth, I had some guy named Janitti on my podcast this past week, and here's what he said to me on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast.
The guy from Spotrac, yes.
Which you can download on iTunes. To me, the second round pick that Houston got from Arizona is canceled out by taking on the Johnson contract, which would mean that Hopkins was traded for nothing.
That's where he gets a little too simplistic here, because it wasn't like I think that other teams were going to take on David Johnson, but they expected the Cardinals to take on some of that money. So the fact that you're paying all of David Johnson's contract, you're getting a third rounder in return, compared to what I think a lot of people thought, that some team was going to take David Johnson off the Cardinals' hands, only have to pay half a salary, and they'd get a mid to late round pick back from the Cardinals. This is where it gets really interesting, because a lot of really smart people, when they try to figure out the values on this trade, they say it's so far out of whack that there aren't any comparables to try to figure everything out. In my mind, I kind of feel like they traded DeAndre Hopkins for a fourth round pick. You just like devalue that second round pick because they're taking on David Johnson's contract and not getting a reasonable pick in return. You know, they just swapped fourth rounders for it. Let's say they're actually trading DeAndre Hopkins for, I'll give you maybe a late third round pick, but it's certainly not the same as trading him for a top 40 or a number 40 overall.
I could see this is where it's going to get interesting with Bill O'Brien and the salary cap, is that, as we know, the Texans are still flush with salary cap space. In fact, you alluded to it in the open. There were tweets. I think Field Yates tweeted out yesterday, who has the most cap space among all the teams? And the Texans are number one, pending some of these deals, I think, getting approved, like Randall Cobb and stuff like that. But the bottom line is that's the case for a lot of teams. They're still waiting for deals to get approved. The Texans are still going to be one of the teams with the most cap space. Seth, I do get the sense, in terms of the deals the Texans have made with these free agents, with Randall Cobb, where it looks like they might have been bidding against themselves and just saying, screw it, we'll take David Johnson's contract, in giving Laremy Tunsil a first offer that's to be the highest paid tackle in football, that they just don't feel like dealing with negotiating contracts. They feel like, you know what? Here's a few extra. Does this mean I don't have to get into a bidding war and take a bunch of phone calls? Here's a few extra million, which that's what the behavior says to me, at least, the behavior says to me that mentality is at the very least in play. And you can do that when you've got $38 million in cap space 2 weeks into free agency, when you've got Tunsil and Watson on the books and you're operating on a very thin budget. You know who should start to get really, really nervous? Guys with no dead money and big contracts, because then the next easiest thing to do is not to all of a sudden become a master negotiator. The next easiest thing to do is to call Zach Fulton into your office and say, we're letting you go. I need $7 million in cap space so I don't have to do all this phone calling stuff when it comes to these contracts.
You know, it's interesting, because it's good that the Texans have that cap space. And I'll give Bill O'Brien credit for at least understanding, you know, that they've got to retain Laremy Tunsil and Deshaun Watson, obviously. And they have the cap space to do it. The other end of the spectrum, Sean, I don't know if you've seen this already, but if you haven't, I want you to take a guess at how much cap space the Kansas City Chiefs have right this moment.
I did. Full disclosure, I did see it. I'll let you tell the audience.
It's $177. So,
that's a steak and a bottle of wine.
There's very few players that they could sign at this point for $177. They're right up against it. Now, they have guys, you know, they've got Travis Kelce. They have Chris Jones is the big one because they've got to give him a long term deal, and that'll help
a little bit. Hey Seth, yeah. Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. Oh boy. Okay, so yeah, if you're talking about paying Pat Mahomes and how are they going to do it, and they'll, you know, they can tack that on to next year. They could start the deal next year. So it's not necessarily going to have to hurt this year. But that does make things interesting. Let's say Pat Mahomes signs before the Texans sign Deshaun Watson, then Deshaun Watson can sit there and say, what are you, you're going to cry poor to me? I see the Chiefs got this done and they got $177 of cap space. You got to pay up here. I need that Pat Mahomes scratch. And people will rightfully say, hey, you don't deserve the same as Pat Mahomes. That might be true, but all is fair in love and war. And Deshaun Watson kind of, even though the Texans have all the leverage, you know, in a strictly conventional sense, Deshaun Watson does have a lot of leverage in just his ability to just decide not to sign. And it gets to be an increasingly uncomfortable situation for Bill O'Brien, your head coach, who's also your general manager. And again, this is another thing. Your general manager's fate is tied to whether or not Deshaun Watson actually wants to stick around here. So they don't, even though by the book, the Texans have all the leverage, Deshaun's kind of got a whole lot of soft leverage that doesn't show up in the ledger.
Hey, Seth, since when is the highest paid quarterback in football routinely actually the best quarterback in football?
Yeah.
The highest paid quarterback in football is almost always the latest good to very good quarterback to happen to come up for a new contract. There have been times where Derek Carr was the highest paid quarterback in football. Jimmy Garoppolo was in that neighborhood last year when he signed an extension. Joe Flacco was at one point the highest paid quarterback in football. So that's where if I were Watson's camp, I'd be like, I don't care what you think about Mahomes versus me. This is just how it works. If Mahomes were to sign first, I think the situation that the Chiefs are in right now with cap, Seth, and add that on to the fact that the rumblings out of Kansas City are that Mahomes may not get a deal done this year, that it may be next year, which would indicate to me that he's kind of playing ball with them in this cap-strapped era that they're in right now because they've got other guys they've got to take care of. I don't think a Mahomes deal is going to get done this offseason. I think a Watson deal could. I don't think if I had to bet, I would say that a Mahomes deal will not get done this. I think Mahomes gets done after his fourth year.
Everything's changed, like, and all your calculations and some of the assumptions you make have to change because of the coronavirus. I think everybody was anticipating and expecting that the cap was just going to keep going up, by huge margins, by double-digit percentages every year after the new TV deals went through. And at this point, I know people are saying that the networks and the NFL are still talking. It would be hard to make any kind of a commitment that large when nobody has any clue how this is going to affect the economy. You know, people can make their best guesses and they can make really smart, educated guesses. But whenever you're dealing in a situation that has never happened before, you know, we've never had a situation like this when professional sports were as big a deal as they are, or when the modern economy is what it is. To figure out what's going on, like you go back to the 1918 pandemic. And there's so many things different about the economy and the world now than it was in 1918 that I don't think you can use anything from history to accurately predict how this is going to affect the economy. So to sit here and say, if I were the Chiefs, I might try to play it like, listen, Pat, I know that you're banking on the salary cap going up, but frankly, like, honestly, I'm talking to you as your friend now. I'm talking to you as your buddy. It's me, Andy. We don't know for sure. These are tempestuous times and we don't know exactly what's going to happen. Take the bird in the hand, base it off of this year. Who knows? The cap might go down next year and then we'll have our own set of issues because we signed you a new deal, but you've got your bird in the hand. You've got this, this fortune that'll sustain your great grandchildren. Your great grandchildren will be, fighting and bickering and maybe even literally stabbing each other in the back over the fortune that you're about to receive right now.
Do you you want some more Ross Tucker?
Yeah, give me some.
All right, here we go. In August, Bill O'Brien gave a third-round pick to Cleveland for pass-catching running back Duke Johnson. In an era in which smart teams continue to devalue running backs, giving up a third-round pick in order to pay $4 million per year to a guy who had 410 rushing yards and 410 receiving yards is absurd. That his skill set is redundant given what David Johnson might be able to do just makes it comical, Seth and Sean.
Well, what if I were to tell you that, sure, in 2018, he had 429 yards receiving and 201 yards rushing. So the Texans planned on taking that and actually utilizing the proper way. And honestly, giving him almost the identical stats that he had in 2018 as he did in 2019, other than he had more rushes. You know, he only had 40 rushes in 2018. He had 83 rushes for 410 yards. And yeah, and like Ross said, he had 800 total yards plus a little from scrimmage. This felt like my first hit of cocaine or something, to where I was like, oh, just the way they show it in the movies, like, hey, no big deal. It's just, okay, what? It's a one-time thing. I'll never do it again. And then all of a sudden your second hit was kind of like, hey, Laramie Tunsil. Okay. Yeah, I'll do that. And then all of a sudden you're in some van down by the river and some guy's having you do a bump for Jadeveon Clowney, and slowly you start to unravel to where now we're sitting on some mattress with no sheets on it in an abandoned warehouse, and I've got like three needles stuck in my arm as the drug dealer walks out the back door with DeAndre Hopkins. That's where it all started, with overpaying for Duke Johnson.
Yep. That's what made you a cocaine addict with syringes in your arm.
That's how I became. Well, I moved on from cocaine eventually, you know. You got to grow. I went to the heroin, yeah.
Yeah. All right, last one from fake Ross Tucker. Hey, at least the trades for Tunsil and Duke Johnson were an indication the Texans were all in on the 2019 season and looking to seize the rare opportunity of having a franchise quarterback on his rookie contract, right? Wrong. Shortly after trading Tunsil, O'Brien sent defensive end Jadeveon Clowney, who had been given the franchise tag, to the Seattle Seahawks for a third-round pick and a couple of role players in Jacob Martin and Barkevious Mingo. That's like trying to lure me in with fried duck and trying to date me. I'm going to eat the duck, but I'm going to tell you, you need to up your culinary skills.
First of all, Ross, I don't know if you understand, but according to people that email me and DM me, Jacob Martin is the next All-Pro defensive end because he had three and a half sacks and a limited number of sacks because they brought him in on third and 10 in these extreme passing situations. I like Jacob Martin, and there's potential and hope there. There is a future there. There are reasons that he wasn't a high draft pick, and he just needs to, if he can put on some bulk and learn how to play a little bit more physically at times. But there is something to be said for Jacob Martin. I think there's something there. I think that the hardest part about this is that I think that Bill O'Brien probably had a better feel for what Jadeveon Clowney's value was than Jadeveon Clowney did. But all the things we don't know are, okay, but what about if Jadeveon Clowney had showed up and just played under the franchise tag? Was it going to be an ugly situation? Like, not that it wasn't a franchise tag situation, but Earl Thomas, remember how he basically said, hey, I'm just going to preserve my body. If I'm sore at all, I'm not practicing. And he kind of just made it really uncomfortable for the Seahawks. It could have ended up being a situation like that. The Clowney deal is the one where I will listen to what people argue about and say in defense of Bill O'Brien and concede that there are some points there. There's a lot more cloud. But I will also say that you got to be careful about saying, I think a lot of people want to look at the current situation with the Clowney and say that that's exactly what his value would have been last year if he were out on the open market. And it's not true. Like, after his 2018 season, where he had a better season, where he wasn't injured, where all those things were different than right now, I think he would have gotten a better offer than he's getting right now, where we are also in a time of coronavirus and teams can't physically examine him and take a look at him and have a conversation with him in a year where he just had sports hernia surgery. There's a lot different between right now and then.
So that's the Ross Tucker article. It doesn't really reveal anything new that we don't already know. It's just Ross getting his opinion out there. And I think he lays it out in a pretty, pretty good fashion on The Athletic. Seth, one little thing to drop in here. Did you see that your hope for an under the radar signing for the Texans went back to his previous employer, Shelby Harris?
Yeah, Shelby Harris is. Look, he this was a guy that wasn't an electric player at all or anything. I think that he was exactly the kind of player that the Texans like, which is he's a good 3-4 defensive lineman. But he had some pass rush ability that I don't think the Broncos utilized as much. And even with that, he ended up with a good chunk of quarterback hits and sacks last year. But the Broncos got him back for like $1.3 million with a bunch of incentives that could add up to $3 million. So I thought that was a good bargain signing the Texans could have had. And apparently, I'm guessing they didn't even make a play at him.
Yeah.
But and which right, also, it leads me to believe that like a lot of the mock drafts are showing, it feels like they're going to take a defensive lineman somewhere in the second round.
Yeah, I saw one yesterday. I think it was on NFL.com yesterday that I saw that had them taking an edge rusher. I forget who it was with their first pick and then a wide receiver, the kid from Arizona State with their second pick.
Yeah, McShay had him. They had him taking Justin Matabuke he's an Aggie. And I'd be surprised. I'd be intrigued because I think he could be a good interior pass rusher, but he's not like a 3-4 defensive lineman body type. So I'd be intrigued because I think the Texans would be going a different direction than what they had with DJ Reader.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.